Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to part two of Walking the Dog with comedian and actor Marcus Brigstocke. If you haven't yet caught part one, do go back and give it a listen, as I think you'll love it. Really hope you enjoy the second part of our chat, and remember to subscribe. Here's Marcus and Ray Ray.
Marcus Brigstocke. Oh, is there a middle name, by the way? I'm imagining a
posh... Of course there are. I'm posh.
Go on, give them to me.
Alexander Owen. So all the Brigstocke men are something Owen Brigstocke, apart from, controversially, mine and Rachel's little boy.
Billy.
Who is not Billy Owen Brigstocke.
Well, this we should say is Rachel Paris.
Yes.
Your partner.
My brilliant wife.
Your brilliant wife, yeah. Who's been on this podcast.
She has.
When she was last on
here, she recommended it.
Love her.
Yes.
I was going to say, what first attracted you to the beautiful, smart, funny, bright, yes, charismatic...
It's hard to know, isn't it?
Rachel Paris.
We worked with each other on a few improv things, but we were both in other relationships, and I'm proud to say, didn't transgress even a little bit. We didn't even flirt with each other. There was one occasion where we went for a walk together, but even then... It was really nice, and I felt it was really nice, but we didn't flirt. Mm. So I'm proud of myself for that. But anyway, then when neither of us were in relationships, and were by then proper friends, I was like, oh no, oh, what do I do? Because you only have to say one thing once, yes, to someone who's your friend, and then it's unrecoverable. You can never take it back if you say the wrong thing. And so she came to my house for a New Year's Eve party, and at 5 something in the morning, when eventually her Uber confirmed that it was on its way, I thought, she's still here and it's 5 and it's only the two of us, that must mean something, it must. So I stood very still and very upright and said, would it be all right if I gave you a kiss? And she just gave me the biggest smile and went, yes. In a kind of, for God's sake, man, I've been here for hours. Will you get on with it?
I mean, which part of still here at 5 in the morning did
you
not understand?
I know. But you have to.
Get it right. It's very hard with friendships because once you break cover, as it were,
you can't put that back in the box.
No.
Right? So anyway, it all played out beautifully, and we got married, and so weird, you know, we got married and were both going, okay, so I've got 2 older kids from my first marriage, but we knew we wanted to have a child together or possibly children, and both knew what we were doing work-wise, and we were like, this is exciting and a bit scary. You'll go there and I'll go here and we'll do this together and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, COVID happened.
Yeah.
And then there was absolutely no work. And it was really scary. But we then started making stuff together. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And apart from the, obviously, ongoing existential fear of death and the constant rage at the government and how they were running things, we had a good time, really good time. We did a live show every Tuesday night.
And these also, and the lip syncs that you did, which really took off and became this global phenomenon. You ended up on Graham Norton, you were on American Breakfast.
Good Morning America.
And do you want to just remind people
it
what
was
those
so
were?
Nuts. Yeah. So we both had COVID, and then we both got better from COVID and suddenly, you know, came out of that fog and went, this is weird. And what do we do? And like everyone else, we were just at home twiddling our thumbs and all the rest of it, and a track came on the radio and Rachel just danced around and lip-synced to it in that banana bread frenzy that we were all in, and I went, holy shit, that's so good, do it again. And I put a baseball cap on her, and she did it again, and it was even funnier. And then we put like a bomber jacket on her, and I went, right, now do it properly, and I'm going to film it. And we went, that's really funny. Let's just put that out. And we weren't thinking, we were not in any way media literate. If we'd been media literate, we could have nailed this. But we didn't. We just went, oh, that's good. And because everyone was at home, a few hundred thousand people watched it and went, that is great. And then I went, well, I'm doing one now. That's that. So then I did one. And we did about 40 of them, I think.
And also you've got previous with your ministry.
Yeah,
moves.
Yeah. Well, I busted out some of the big moves.
And you are, we should say, in case anyone's not all rich, I'm sure you will be, Marcus is also a musical theatre star as well.
Yeah, lovey. Absolute lovey.
So
yes, we did those and they were just great. And the Good Morning America thing was so brilliantly insane. They contacted us and we had about 10... big Zoom meetings with people going, you guys are just, you're the most incredible people, and we're going to build a whole segment around this, and this is what's going to happen. And we rehearsed a lip sync to do live on the show. Then there were more meetings and more meetings and more meetings, and then it got to Good Morning America and these two entirely nonplussed presenters went, and over in the United Kingdom a pair of, I want to say, comedians have been passing their time doing lip syncing videos, and well, here they are. And we kind of went, hi, hello, and they went, now do your thing, and we did it, and then they went, and that was them, and then they moved on to something else. So it was delightfully bonkers. You know, if we'd been in any way sort of smart or media literate, as people call it, we would have gone straight from the end of the pandemic into making stuff. Wait, Raymond has fully found a friend.
Marcus, I think this could be the one.
Tiny little white and grey and black haired Shih Tzu. Is that another Shih Tzu?
Very good.
Think so. Not Imperial, though. Am I right? I mean, come on.
Not quite our sort.
No, absolutely not PLU.
I'm seeing the Owen coming out
here. Yeah, here he is. Here he is at last.
He's arrived.
Yeah.
Raymond, have you pulled, darling? What's your dog called?
Dory.
Dory?
Dory.
Oh.
Look, Raymond, you found Dory. Match made in heaven.
Maybe it's time.
Raymond, stop being aloof.
You see, the trouble is he's got no game.
Either that or he's got all the game and he's, what do they call, he's negging her.
Oh, he negs her. Yeah, he is a bit her. Premier League footballer. Do you know what I mean? He's got that, yeah, whatever, we had a good time. Don't make a thing of it.
We met in the park, let it be what it was.
Hey.
See you, Dory.
Hey. Bye-bye, Dory. So tell me, Marcus, all about this podcast that you and Rachel are now doing.
Well, we should have been smart. We should have just cracked on and done this straight after the pandemic. But we were so keen to get out into the world and start gigging again that we didn't. And then obviously we had our baby and that's that. But we've sort of been back and had a look at what we've been doing. And so we've got this new podcast called How Was It For You? And it's less sexual than the title suggests. But anyway, it's reviewing stuff. And so we're not going, oh, have you seen that film? It's either good or bad. We are, for example, talking about what's it like when people are noisy in the cinema. Or it's all the stuff sort of surrounding things. So we tend not to kind of review art and say whether it's good or bad. But I have done some reviews of new gourmet tinned fish that has recently come to the market. I'd like to think, Rachel disagrees with this pretty profoundly, that it will become an indispensable guide to the modern world where people are like, but what did Paris and Brigstock think of this cultural thing or this material thing that you can have? But it isn't that really, it's just the two of us just being funny.
It's kind of an insight into your energy together as a couple, isn't it?
That's 100% what it is.
Yeah.
It's 100% what it is. We're looking for stuff that obviously is interesting to talk about, but we're looking for stuff where we either both passionately agree or disagree, and then yeah, just see what happens. Because we, you know, people are always asking us like, oh, and is it funny at home? Are you funny at home? And the answer is yeah, we are. We make each other laugh. God knows whether anyone else would think we're funny. We'll find out, won't we, when they listen to How Was It For You? But we do stuff all the time, voices and characters and bits. So,
well, that's it. And I think it's an interesting thing, obviously, when you met Rachel, even though, you know, you were both doing the right thing, you do pick up on that energy. It's a sense of the surreal and the absurd. And you know it within minutes when you meet someone that you think,
definitely,
oh, yeah, this can work. We can be friends. Or definitely, in your case,
you just know, don't you? If someone, if you sort of put something out there, some comment, or you see something and it makes you giggle or pleases you or displeases you, and the person you're with is just blank.
And I have a series of deal breakers, one of which, it's very specific. If you're doing a voice, so if I'm saying I'm talking about someone we both know, and I said, oh, they said this to me, I will probably do, subconsciously, I'll do a vague sort of go at their voice.
Yeah.
Obviously avoiding racism here. What I mean is, you know, I would want the anecdote to sparkle a bit and give it a bit of energy, so I wouldn't just say it in my flat voice. What I hate is when you do that and someone says, oh, I didn't know they were Welsh.
It's exhausting.
I sort of think, right, what you've done is you've killed the anecdote for no reason. And also what you're saying is it's that improvisation thing of you've just put a wall up.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So you,
it's all, it's,
I can't
all
play with you.
It's always status stuff, right? You can play with status in a joyful way, but when people are just trying to put their hand on your face to squash you down, I'll never forget, it's a really weird thing that happened. So when I do, when I gig, club gigs, not tours really, I leave very quickly after I've been on. I don't love the interaction with an audience after I've been on.
Why is that, Marcus?
I tell you what it is when you've been on, you've been a version of yourself that's very big, very opinionated, very loud, very dominant, and you can't then have a normal conversation with someone who's seen you. Mm. You can't. And they don't believe you, even if you sincerely go, but what do you do? Who are you? Yeah. They just don't believe you. They're like, I've just seen you do this thing. So anyway, I tend to leave very quickly, and I was at the Comedy Store, and I said to a mate who was there with me, I said, oh, just so you know, after the show, I do tend to sort of put my head down and leave as quickly as I can up those famous stairs. And they said, oh, why? And I said, well, there's that. And then there's this thing, especially blokes, where they'll try and score points off you. And he said, oh, what do you mean? And we were going up the stairs, and I got to the top of the stairs, and a guy who'd been in the audience went, oh, what up, mate? Absolutely loved that. Loved it. Oh, sorry, not you, the other comic. And I was with my friend, and I went, that. And the guy went, what? He was really defensive. And I said, well, I was just explaining to my friend how, like, after you've been on stage, if you've had a good gig, sometimes, and particularly men, will feel a bit threatened. And then they'll sort of feel like they need to squash you down by saying something negative about what you did. And I was trying to explain it, and then you just did it. I mean, I was very lucky not to get punched, let's be honest. I've always thought when it comes to fights, I'm very likely to come second. But yeah, so I don't stick around after shows. I find it really, it's weird because I'm such a comfortable person with other people. I love talking.
Do you think you're happier now than, I suppose what I mean by that is that,
than when we started this walk? I do actually, I've had a lovely time.
But no, what I mean is that I feel like there was a period of time when there was, I call it, everyone gets that white heat period. Yeah. And I mean, the spam a lot, you were doing a lot of TV, and there's a sense, I know this from comedian friends of mine, that I sort of feel that's not when they're at their happiest, that there feels like there's a contentment around you now, that you're doing what you want and there's no compromises to be had in your life to the same degree, you know.
I think very largely that is true. I think that, that's dead right. The kind of the white heat thing where what you're doing is saying no to things because you're so busy doing other things, and it's just a frenzy, and it's really thrilling, but I don't think it's necessarily very satisfying. Yeah. But then there's sort of two things have happened. So one is post-pandemic, I certainly have, and I know some other comics have too, we've changed our relationship with working. We've changed it so that driving to Norwich and back in one night is something that I don't treat trivially anymore and go, yep, it's my job, I have to. I go, maybe not. I think maybe that might make me feel very tired and a bit unhappy. I might go to Norwich for two nights, but then I have to weigh up, well, I'll be away from Rachel and Billy then, so maybe I don't want to do that either. So I'm working less, but that's also come at the same time as I'm 50 now and I'm one of the big group of straight white, predominantly straight white men, I have to say that if you've been to boarding school, you know, of the big loud white straight men who had it so good for so long. And I am working less and I get fewer offers. Now I have the bonus, the benefit, that when I feel like, well, why aren't I being asked to do that anymore? I have an answer, which is because my wife is. And it's very pleasing, right? So then you're like, it's not a mystery and no one's got it wrong. The things I was asked to do, Rachel's 11 years younger than me, she's being asked to do now. And I'm like, that seems about right. I think that is fair. That's probably her in that helicopter, by the way. I assume she's off to do one of my television shows.
She's going to Wembley Arena to perform with Gary Barlow.
It is.
But that's amazing.
No one should pretend
it
isn't a bit painful, because it is. And it's weirdly a little bit humiliating, right? No, I don't mean Rachel having that work. I mean, it's a little bit humiliating. And the reason I can say that, not just about myself, is you know it is. It has currency when people go, didn't you used to be on telly? Or didn't you used to be something? Or whatever happened to? Everybody knows there's a currency of humiliation in the fading of people who've had a lot of very public success. And I think that you have to just, not you, I have to just sort of measure how I feel about that and be conscious of it and go, sometimes it's a bit painful to me that I'm not as wanted as I used to be, but it isn't humiliating. It's a bit painful, it isn't humiliating, and it also isn't wrong, right? It's not wrong. I didn't make a terrible mistake. The industry isn't mistaken in what it's doing. This is just the where we are of it, you know, and it's okay.
There's two types of performers, essentially, and I suppose there are some performers who would be, give me that, I'll do anything, I've never really seen you as that kind of performer, I suppose. I think your stuff is very considered and...
Although, let's not forget, I was on Hole in the Wall. You had to do a shape, and the wall came towards you. And if you didn't do the shape, it knocked you into the pool. But can I just quickly, having told you I did it, just defend it? So they sent me a tape of it, of Dick and Dom hosting that show. They made a pilot with Dick and Dom, who I didn't know, but they are funny men. They are funny, funny men. Really like Dick and Dom. And they made the show, and I went, that is so fun. That's what my brother and I would do, right? Next to a pool growing up, or even now we would go, right, stand there, I'm going to run towards you with this pool chair, see if you can dodge it, and we'll see what happens, right? It's that. So I saw it, and then I got there to the studio, and I said, oh, it would be great to say hello to Dick and Dom before we start. And they went, oh, have you not heard? And I went, no. And they went, it's not Dick and Dom, it's Dale Winton. So Dale took it very seriously. Right, so when you got knocked in the pool from the funny shape, Dale would go, are you very disappointed? And you go, no, Dale, I'm not. I am not. Don't
keep it lying, Dale.
If you treat this like it's serious, then me being on it looks very bad. Very bad. Whereas I was there, I've still got the silver suit they gave me for it because I think it's so funny. But Dale treated it really seriously and it was awful. But apart from that, I stand by all my choices.
And the jump you did, which...
But I would do the jump again.
Would you?
Even though my knee, as I stand here now, you'll see I'm standing on my right leg with my left leg held out to the side because this knee still hurts 10 years later.
I think you'll find that's called contrapposto, the classical position of Michelangelo.
I've simply got what Channel 4 call achy knee from the jump.
But so, isn't that interesting? Things like the jump, you say I do that again. Do you still have that? I suppose it's an adrenaline, dopamine thing. Am I reading too much into that?
No, you're not. So winter sports is a passion for me. I set up the Altitude Comedy Festival so that myself and all my mates in comedy could go skiing and snowboarding, and it still runs and it's amazing. And I love that feeling of being 100% present on skis or a snowboard and just being like this in this moment. And there's loads of dopamine and adrenaline tied up in that. But with the jump, I mean, I was trained by Olympians to do stuff that I've always liked since I was a kid. I've always thought, that looks amazing. Look, they're going so fast.
Yeah.
So I was trained by these brilliant people to do this amazing thing. And so I thought it was great. And I watched it back and I went, I know how that looks, but I also know how I felt about it. So
come on.
I think the urge for authenticity, the keenness for authenticity, for me only extends as far as you should always make the next thing, right? That if you're a creative person, your task should be make the next thing. If you stop on something that's been a success or a failure, then you're sort of deluding yourself. Because I've sometimes felt like, oh, well, I've made it now. I am successful or whatever. And it's a nonsense. It's a total nonsense. The only success is, are you brave enough to make the next thing?
Mm.
So that's where what matters to me about sort of authenticity is that, really. And that brings us back to the podcast with Rachel. That's the next thing. And I've held out against podcasts for a long time because I was so unclear about what the rules were, right? What are the rules? Well, who's in charge of this? I just met you in a park. We've been for a lovely walk and had a chat. Is this it? And it is. That's the thing, you know. So that feels like a really authentic and really fun thing to do.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are incredibly open, I can tell that. You've done a hell of a lot of work on yourself.
Yeah.
And
I've done the work. Yeah.
You strike me as a very considered, calm person. Do you have triggers? Can you lose it occasionally? Have you...
Not so much. I definitely have political triggers, I would say. And sometimes writing political comedy, I had a really good producer who I didn't get on with, who used to say to me, this is only funny if you agree with you and that's not your job. And I'm like, oh, damn it. And I'd have to go back and rewrite things. And there's always an element of that that's true, because sometimes someone's disagreement will get in the way of them finding something funny. But the aim should always be that whether someone agrees with you or not, that they're capable of finding what you make funny. But I do have political triggers. There's some stuff makes me so angry that I kind of go a bit blind. But otherwise, no.
Do you know what's interesting? Since we've been on this walk, you're probably not aware of it, but there have been so many people sort of like touching their partner, going, look who it is, look who it is. And to me, that's the nice kind of fame. But do you know what I mean?
Well, you're not famous enough for them to want to come over or take a picture, but they do go, that's that person.
No, but what I'm saying is, there's a high recognisability factor with you.
Yeah.
And is that something you enjoy? Do you feel comfortable with it?
Do you know how comfortable I am with it? I have genuinely no idea that it's going on. And Rachel is always going,
yeah,
you're such a knob. You've no idea. You've no idea. Now, though, there's... So I made a couple of kids' shows. I made a show called King Stupid and another one called Sorry I've Got No Head. And the...
I never interrupt, but stupid. Amazing.
Stupid, yeah. Right? There you go.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Perfect. You see?
The producer, when Marcus just mentioned King Stupid, I'm going to say what happened. I mean, it was like Harry Styles had walked in.
Yeah.
She went bright red.
Yeah. So King Stupid was a character that I played, and he's in charge of all of the stupid things that happen in the world. And I had a gremlin assistant played by Rusty Goff, Goober. Yeah, there you go, Raymond.
Raymond.
And we sort of oversaw all these stupid things, which were all sketches. And they were sketches with mostly child performers. So there's now like an age group of people for whom I'm very famous because I'm a big part of their show. Pointing it
I'm so sorry, Marcus. If I'd have known, our producer
No, we should have started with this.
A stalker.
So I'm like, I'm super famous with those people, and I totally forget about that. And I do have like really young people coming up to me going, "Are you King Stupid?" And I go, "Oh yeah, I am. Yeah." Actually, it's a real sadness to me. I made the first series of that 2 weeks after my eldest son was born. And so it was a really mad time. And just as the pieces fell, I was asked to make the second series a couple of weeks after my daughter was born, a couple of years later. And I said no, because it was too much. And I just went, do you know what, I can't. And that was the right decision. I 100% stand by it. But I do wish they'd been able to go, fine, we'll make this in 6 months' time or whatever. And they couldn't. They used someone
else. But that tells me a lot that you did that. Because those are the choices which I think, you know, when it all comes to an end, those are quite defining.
Yeah.
And I don't think, much as, you know, I know you enjoyed King Stupid, I don't think that will be...
I think one series made it even more special.
You're not going to be lying there saying, I just wish I'd done another King Stupid.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I think you will be saying, God, I'm so glad I was there for my kids.
Yeah. And now, so my big kids are 21 and 19 and Billy is 2.
How's that? So how lovely, though.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's so fun. And I'm able now... As you said, you know, that sort of the white heat, voracious hunger for everything has faded. And I'm able now to spend loads of time with Billy at this age. And he's so funny and exhausting and all of those things, you know, but he's so funny and so joyful. So I say no to loads of stuff just to go and do the family thing.
I think the thing about the white heat thing is I think it's, you know... It's a temporary form of insanity, necessarily. It's like going viral. It's like, actually, you have to get off that train.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't slow down. You know?
Exactly. And if you start imagining that you're in some way in charge of what happens next, I mean, you are, obviously, you have your choices about what you do.
Yeah.
But in charge of the bigger picture, you're not. You're not ever. You can only... end up giving away too much of yourself in order to try and keep that thing going, and I'm glad to say that's not the case anymore. You know, and that, like I said, the pandemic really changed that for me. It made me realise how valuable time at home is, and Rachel's way smarter where that's concerned than I am. She's always understood the value of stillness and just being. She's more patient.
What have you learnt from Rachel in terms of how to be, I suppose? What do you find inspiring about?
Loads of things. One is, don't let her cook unless she absolutely insists.
Is it bad?
No, actually it isn't, but I'm the worst backseat cook in the world.
Bit of a control freak? Are you?
Yeah, dreadful. So one of the big things I've learned, and I must continue, for me, I have to work on it, is read novels. Read novels. Novels are better for you than probably anything else. They're slow, they take concentration, they don't flood your brain with dopamine, and they, all novels, even quite bad ones, grow empathy. So, and she's a voracious reader.
I love that, Marcus.
She's always got a book on the go, whereas I'm like, I'll read all the news every day. I've nearly completed Twitter, you know.
I think it's kind of also a cure for narcissism because you're immersing yourself in someone else's world.
Absolutely.
Twitter's about you and your world. And
absolutely. 100%. And they're so... Yeah, it's just such a good... such an obviously good activity. I just read a book called Demon Copperhead, which is based loosely on the story of David Copperfield. And my God, it's so good. It's so good. Just brilliant. And entirely Rachel's recommendation. And so I think the thing she gives me in exchange for the thing I give her, she says, like, slow down, you know, just be a bit more present. And I give her some of the opposite of that, which is be brave. Be braver, be, you know, like, take a big step forward. You know, I've been a big loud stand-up for much, much longer than she has. And I think she knows she's very funny, but I do remind her how funny she is often, yeah. Because, I don't know, it doesn't seem as obvious to her how funny she is sometimes as it is to me. I see her on stage and I just think she's amazing.
But bear in mind as well, it is that difficult thing where as a woman you are encouraged to,
yeah,
don't be boastful, don't be arrogant.
Yeah.
Don't be, you know, yeah. It's the Barbie speech, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. But, yeah.
Well, Marcus, I've honestly had such a lovely time
with
you.
Wasn't this nice?
What a nice man you are. And I knew you would be because I loved Rachel. The 5 a.m. moment, I feel deeply invested in that. And I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. And you were in Love, actually. The most romantic film of all time. Although, you know, a bit problematic these days to the younger generation. Sure. I still love it. I'm old.
Yeah. Pivotal scene, though, mine. Absolutely pivotal. And the rest of the film hangs on that one moment.
It is, with Bill Nye.
I will just tell you very quickly, the read-through for that... Just think about the read-through, the table read for that film. Because we all went off to do, that went that way and that went that way and Colin Firth went over there and da da da. There was one day where we sat around a table and we read that whole script.
Was it amazing? Did you know it was going to be huge?
It was astonishing. I did know it was going to be huge and I also thought at the end of the 4 and a bit hour read, this is too long, some of these stories won't make sense. And what's really... sad is that Laura Linney's story in that with her brother who is in a sort of care home, yeah, and is really struggling with his life and he nearly hits her at one point. In the final edit of the film, in my opinion, it doesn't make enough sense. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you when we sat around the table and read the entirety of that story and what you saw was a story about a carer, and those people are hidden all the time. Richard Curtis knows all about them because Comic Relief is so involved with helping people who spend their lives caring for relatives. But her story made everybody around that table cry and she did it so brilliantly. And the story was stunning. And then in the film, it's quite truncated and you're like, she should go with the guy, not look after her brother. Bye. And it's kind of over.
Yeah.
And I did have a feeling like, this is too long. But I really love the film because I've read the full version. So the truncated stories, I'm like, I know what that bit is and that bit. And do you know that Rowan Atkinson is an angel?
Is that in the
he's
film?
He's Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, of course.
He's an angel. And the reason...
Because he interferes, essentially, with the narrative.
The reason Rowan wraps up the present...
Yeah.
The necklace that Emma Thompson's husband
cheating Alan Rickman
is buying is so that she sees it happen. And the reason Rowan is there at the airport and opens the gate when the boy runs through for true love is because he's Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, Marcus, I cannot tell you what a pleasure it's been. I'm going to let you
likewise.
Go back to...
Thank you so much.
Lovely Rachel, Billy Brigstock, Billy Brigstock.
Yay!
And Roy the Chameleon, let's
Roy
not
the
forget.
Chameleon. Now one-eyed Roy.
Can I ask one question about Roy? Is he emotional? Do you have an emotional relationship with a chameleon?
Yeah.
Really?
Not as emotional as you would with a dog. Like, I don't really know if Roy's okay. But, you know, he communicates his feelings with his colours. And so they don't hide. Some chameleon species hide using their colours, but mostly they're telling you what's going on for them.
So if he's depressed, what colour does he go?
Dark, grey, grey and dark, drab, grey, really drab colours. When he's excited, he's bright orange and yellow.
Well, so am I.
Yeah,
fake
right?
tan night.
I tell you honestly, if human beings could express more through just changing colour, that whole thing with Rachel of going, would it be okay if I gave you a kiss? I could have solved that by 2 a.m. Listen, young lady.
She's getting a bit orange.
Look at these colours right now. Ba-bam. But yeah, Roy is... I have an emotional relationship with Roy, and I'll be very sad when he passes away. But what a life he's had. 9 years of having locusts and other live bugs hand-delivered to him. What a life.
Oh, Roy.
Yeah,
I'm so glad you've had Roy.
He's a good egg. He's exactly the right sort of pet for a comedian as well, because...
Why?
Well, because I go away a lot. That's why I don't have a dog. Some comedians shouldn't have dogs.
Yeah. Some it works, some it doesn't.
Because if you're going to have a dog, you have to look after it really well, whereas...
Do you? I leave him home alone.
With Roy, I can leave Roy in his vivarium. It's heated. His light comes on and off. He has running water in there.
All right.
You know,
all
so
right,
he's
Foxtons.
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Have you enjoyed meeting Raymond?
So much.
What do you think?
I just think he's regal. Do you know how he carries himself? He knows he's important. Not arrogant. He just knows he's important.
And I wish you so much success with your podcast.
Well, you
with
too.
Rachel
Thanks
Paris.
So much for having me. It's just been so nice.
And we should say it's called How Is It For You?
How Was It For You?
Yeah.
I think it starts on April the 10th.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to find yourself saying a lot.
I think, do I have to say like and subscribe? Is that the thing? Like and subscribe.
Can you give Raymond a goodbye? You're known for your voices. Can you do a voice?
I tell you what, Raymond, I'm going to bust out my favourite voice of all time. Big Jez of Vine. 288 to 91, Vine at bbc.co.uk. We really want to hear from people about this one. Are you an imperial shih tzu? If you are, give us a call. 288 to 91.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of Walking the Dog. We'd love it if you subscribed. And do join us next time on Walking the Dog, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.